From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, John Boehner will resign. Pope Francis and Chinese President Xi Jinping in Washington. Hundreds dead outside Mecca. Scott Walker out. Ben Carson on Islam. VW in big trouble. The Pope comes to America and speaks to Congress.
Now is the time for courageous action and strategies. I'm at implementing a culture of care.
A culture of care. Fraud at Volkswagen, emission cheats. CEO Martin Winterkorn apologized and is out.
Millions of people all over the world trust our brands, our cars, and our technology. I am deeply sorry that we have broken this trust.
And Chinese President Xi Jinping met with top U.S. business leaders in Seattle earlier this week, and yesterday was greeted with fanfare in Washington.
I'm convinced that as long as the two sides maintain a candid and committed communication, we will be able to solve our problems.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with David Joachim of The New York Times, Ryan Grimm of The Huffington Post, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What are you thinking on John Boehner, Pope Francis, Xi Jinping? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With us from Washington, Ryan Grimm, Washington Bureau Chief for The Huffington Post. Ryan, welcome back to On Point.
No, thanks for having me.
Also from Washington, David Joachim joins us, Assistant Washington Editor at The New York Times. David, welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Ryan, and David.
David, let me come straight to you on John Boehner. What exactly do we know about what the speaker will do and why?
We don't know a lot. We know that the speaker has told his caucus in the House that he is to resign not only his speakership, but also his seat, his Ohio seat.
From Congress.
Resigned from Congress in October. We don't know precisely what the reason is. We know that, I mean, ever since his speakership began, he's been under strain to try to keep together a very, very divided Republican caucus.
Mm-hmm.
He's been under pressure, especially lately, over a looming government shutdown. There's a ultra-conservative wing of his caucus that would like to see that want to take a stand against Planned Parenthood and want to use the Congress's power over spending to take a stand over Planned Parenthood, mm-hmm. and defund the group. So we don't know if it's related to that. We don't know if John Boehner just thought yesterday's time he had with the Pope was the pinnacle and that was it. But not to be flip about it.
Yeah.
But we don't know. But this seems to have been a long time in coming.
Big. This is big news for some of our listeners. By the time they are hearing this, there may be more detail out there. Ryan Grimm, how are you looking at this? There's been talk about a Boehner coup by Republican hardliners for weeks, months, more now as a possibility. We've got the government shut down right in front of us, and Boehner said, look, I don't want to do that. He worked very hard to get the Pope here, was in tears yesterday during much of the Pope's presentation. I don't know, did he have a vision? Is this about Republican resistance, about the Pope coming to town, about John Boehner's own timetable? What do you think, Ryan?
It's about Planned Parenthood. This is all unfolding very quickly. But what I'm being told is that was the straw that broke the camel's back. He told his colleagues that was it for him. He thinks that this approach that they want to take, that his kind of like far right wing members want to take to shut down the government to try to defund Planned Parenthood, that was it for him. He doesn't want to try to go through with that. He knows that it's futile. You know, you cannot. You cannot defund Planned Parenthood that way. It wouldn't work for a variety of different reasons. And so to protect the kind of reputation of the institution or whatever's left of it, he's deciding to step down. And the timing allows him to work with moderate Republicans and Democrats to get through a funding bill, and they can probably do it now for another year or so. There's no risk to his speakership, since he has already kind of sacrificed the speakership.
Ryan, maybe I'm kind of dense here, but
with his colleagues,
explain for us how him announcing that he'll resign would play into how the fight over government funding and Planned Parenthood will play out. How does it go through more smoothly because he's announced that he'll resign in October?
Because now he can get Democratic support for whatever he does. Democrats in the past have said, look, unless you give us kind of, you know, what we're looking for, you're the majority, you work this out on your own. And so he would try to cobble together a majority within only the Republican conference, and he would always fail, and then he would come back, and there would be a coalition of Democrats and moderate Republicans that would pass it. But first, you'd have chaos. You know, you'd have a government shutdown. You'd approach defaulting on the government's debt, etc. And so, with all of the drama gone by virtue of his announced resignation, now he can go right to Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi and say, all right, how many votes do you have for this? How many do I need? Okay, I need 50, 60 Republicans. And Boehner can easily find, 50 or 60 Republicans to support keeping the government open.
And Planned Parenthood stays funded and the government stays open. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Jack Beatty, how ironic that devoted Catholic John Boehner, with his news of his own resignation, kind of stepping on the Pope's message here in this week of an enormous papal visit.
Yes, but, you know, it really was the culmination of a long-time ambition of his, of going back years to have a pope, any pope, but this one especially, address Congress. So that was really a personal triumph. And I think in the history of American Catholicism, the speaker certainly deserves a salute for that. Budget expert Stan Collender, for example, was predicting that he would have to shut down the government at least for a few days to drain the passion from the so-called Freedom Caucus so that they could then go back and sign a deal. But now, as Ryan shrewdly says, he's free of the Hastert rule. That was that named after the unlamented former speaker that basically said, we don't do anything unless we can pass it with Republican votes. Well, now we can pass it, a continuing resolution, maybe even a budget longer term, without those votes. But of course, the Democrats will have a price. And one of the prices they're going to demand is more spending on domestic programs.
And what about a successor, David Joachim, to John Boehner?
I think the race may be wide open. You've got a relatively new majority leader in Representative McCarthy. I think it's right at this point, this early point. The news about Mr. Boehner only came out a little while ago. I think it's a little bit too early to tell, but maybe my colleagues on this panel would know more.
Ryan, thoughts on a potential successor here and how the Republican Party is likely to be roiled by this resignation?
I think, as strange as it sounds, we may be looking at a Speaker McCarthy. What was confirmed today by Boehner in his statement was that he was planning to step down after the 2014 elections. And I had actually reported that in late 2013, that was his plan. And then I was embarrassed when he didn't step down. But he said what changed his calculation was Eric Cantor's loss in a primary. So there was no heir apparent. So he decided to stay on. And he said all this in his statement announcing his resignation. There is still no heir apparent, though. But McCarthy, he was able to, and because he moved so quickly, to round up enough votes for majority leader, what he has is that he is not terribly objectionable to a lot of different elements of the party. He is not what people would consider to be a strong leader or some kind of principled conservative who's going to kind of march the party in the right direction. But, in a lot of races, that isn't the kind of person that you elevate. Different factions will elevate somebody that they think is the least objectionable. And, unless somebody emerges soon, then McCarthy has the inside track. And you can be sure he is on the phone right now. All day, and he'll be on the phone all night making calls. And that's what enabled him to win last time, that there were several days passed before some other competitors jumped into the race, and by then he had locked it down. He's been running for things since he was 4 or 5 years old. He probably ran for his, you know, pre-K.
Yeah, Ryan, let me ask you. The hard right in the Republican Party in Congress has fought hard with John Boehner, been very critical, threatened coups. Is this a victory for the right wing of the Republican Party that Boehner resigns, or do they end up somehow losing this card game?
It depends on what you want out of life. You know, if your goal is to change policy and change the direction of the country, then it's a loss, because they are not doing that. If your goal is to put scalps on the wall, then sure. They took Boehner out of the speakership before he otherwise might have left. At the end of this coming term. But what do they get out of it? You know, that remains to be seen. If they can put a hardliner as the speaker, then that is closer to a victory, but that still is not policy. You know, controlling the House of Representatives is not policy. You need to find a way to enact laws or stop laws from being enacted to actually achieve your goals.
John Boehner resigning as Speaker of the House, resigning from the U.S. Congress. Jack Beattie, a scalp on the wall at the end of a week in which Pope Francis said, "Let's get over the polarization." That is an unexpected turn of events.
What a coda to that week, really. But he has had such a hard. It's been just such a hard slog for him. He's an institutionalist. He's a man for getting things done for all his conservatism, and with the ultras elected in 2010, he just was dealing with people who wanted to burn the place down, and that is not what an institutionalist wants.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, big week. Pope Francis all over the place, in Washington, in New York today. John Boehner will leave Congress in October. Speaker of the House, Republican John Boehner, says he apparently will be out. The Volkswagen meltdown out there, Xi Jinping in Washington, and much more. David Joachim is with us, assistant Washington editor at the New York Times. Ryan Grimm is here, Washington bureau chief for the Huffington Post. Our own Jack Beattie's here, and you can join us. What do you make of the John Boehner news? What did you hear in the Pope's speeches this week, above all before Congress, but also at the UN, where he has been he's speaking on Friday morning? What about Xi Jinping? Where's this U.S.-China relationship going? What are you looking for there? And what about all the news off the 2016 campaign trail? Scott Walker out, Hillary Clinton against the Keystone Pipeline, Sanders way up in New Hampshire, Ben Carson on Islam, Donald Trump versus Fox News, the Pope at the UN this morning saying we've got to have equitably shared decision-making in this world.
In the pursuit of the ultimate goal of granting all countries, without exception, a share in and a genuine and equitable influence on decision-making processes.
The Pope before the UN today. Yesterday before Congress, he went at a lot of issues, spoke very softly, but had a lot to say. Here he was talking about, urging action on climate change.
I call for a courageous and responsible effort to redirect our steps and to avert the most serious effects of the environmental deterioration caused by human activity. I'm convinced that we can make a difference. I'm sure.
Pope Francis calling for courageous and responsible effort there. You heard him, to redirect our steps to avert the most serious effects of environmental deterioration caused by human activity. Okay, we've got Donald Trump saying this week there's no climate change, there's just weather, and a whole lot of other Republicans perhaps unsettled by that, but there was the Pope on that and much more. Karen in Omaha, Nebraska is calling. Karen, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just got in my car and heard the news that Boehner was resigning, and I was a little bit surprised by that, and yet I wasn't. I've been following the Pope's visit, and every time I saw Boehner and the Pope, I could see that he was really moved by the Pope. And, he worked hard. He's asked several popes to come, and address the Congress, and so this Pope did. And I could see that he was really moved and touched. I really did see that. I've never really been a supporter of Boehner, but I really felt like I got something from him this time. And I don't know, maybe he's just looking at it like he really was moved by what the Pope had to say. And how could he, like, work in the environment when there's so much resistance to what the Pope was saying, you know, from his party?
Yeah, Karen, I've got it, and I appreciate your call. David Joachim, this is not our usual terrain, but this is the week of a visit of a spiritual leader, and quite a charismatic one at that, and John Boehner repeatedly reduced to tears there behind the Pope as he spoke. What about it? Is there a Road to Damascus thing here, a kind of come-to-Jesus moment for Boehner? Can you give that any credence?
Yeah, I would think not. I would think that the die was cast before the visit, and that you know, it just worked out pretty well for John Boehner that that's sort of you know, represented the sort of the pinnacle of his time in Congress. But, you know, I mean, his emotions were unmistakable, and now, of course, we can reinterpret those emotions through a different filter. And maybe there was a little bit more going on in his head than was even obvious. But, you know, it really was quite a scene on Capitol Hill in particular. You know, the amount, you know, the even for Washington, I mean, the city basically shut down. Federal workers stayed home for the most part. The image of him riding around Washington in his Fiat with the window open, waving, his open air Pope mobile. It really was just an unbelievable sight. And I think that you know, there was a lot of politics in what the Pope had to say. I mean, my first impression of his remarks was, oh, there's something here for everybody. And I think a lot of people, their first impression was, oh, you know, he's trying to, you know, sort of reaching out to both the left and the right. There's kind of another way of looking at it, which is that you could say, you know, he had something for everybody, but he also kind of took swings at everybody. You know, if you think about the, you know, what he had to say about immigration reform, you know, to opponents of immigration reform, most of us were once foreigners, you know, on people crossing the southern border of the United States. We must not be taken aback by their numbers, but rather view them as persons.
You know, there was a lot here. Your own paper reporting it says, you know, look, in the end, though, a lot more of it came down difficult for Republicans than Democrats. So difficult for Democrats on family, but less time and emphasis on those issues, same-sex marriage and so on, abortion by this Pope. I mean, he's still swinging at the UN today. He's declaring, he's talking about what he calls a right of the environment that mankind has no authority to abuse it. Telling more than 100 world leaders there that they need urgent action to halt the destruction of God's creation. We've got God and the Vatican and the Pope and politics and policy all mixed up this week. And John Boehner headed out. Eugene in Waterloo, Iowa. Eugene, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for having my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not so sorry to see Boehner go because he invited Netanyahu to the Congress. And even
what's wrong with that? The Pope was there yesterday. Netanyahu was there before.
What's that?
What's wrong with that? I mean, we had the Pope there yesterday. We've had other national leaders before Congress before.
Well, even people in Israel didn't think Netanyahu should be over there.
Yeah.
In Congress.
Yeah. Yeah. There was. So you invited Netanyahu. So glad to see the last of him. All right, Eugene. Thank you for your call. Charlie in Atlanta, Georgia. Charlie, you're on the air.
Well, Tom, you won the news lottery this week with all the stories you got.
It's more than I can handle almost, Charlie. What are you looking at?
Well, you know, the news about John Boehner and the news about the Republican presidential race leads me to wonder, you know, what's going on with the Republicans? Who are these people? You have Ben Carson, who thinks he's qualified to be president of the United States, who clearly demonstrates that he doesn't understand the Constitution. You have Donald Trump, who is the most boorish, know-nothing loudmouth who has ever tread onto the American political stage, and he's leading in the Republican polls. Carly Fiorina, in the last debate, was talking about foreign policy and about Vladimir Putin, and she basically outlined a scenario which is likely to lead to nuclear war. These people are insane. And maybe John Boehner has realized this, and maybe, as one of your commenters said, this Planned Parenthood situation, this is not going to work, so I've got to get out of here. But what's going on with those guys?
Well, we don't know what's going on entirely with John Boehner. We have heard a lot from Republicans. Of course, they have a lot of support. You're clearly not in that camp, Charlie, but there's been plenty out there. On the other hand, if you're following the Pope on his statements about the environment, you have to wonder about this. This was Donald Trump talking about climate change.
I am not a believer in climate change. Now, it's gone global warming and climate change. It's weather.
It's weather, says Donald Trump, in the week that the Pope is saying there's a right of the environment not to be destroyed. Immigration, David, you mentioned it, another big issue this week. It was brought very movingly home by a little 5-year-old girl who, I don't know how coordinated this was, but she made her way to the Pope, got a chance to briefly talk with him, and then talked with Sky News about her circumstances and what she wanted on immigration about her family.
Pope Francis, I want to tell you that my heart is sad, and I would like to ask you to speak with the President and the Congress in legalizing my parents, because every day I am scared that one day they will take them away from me. I believe I have the right to live with my parents. I have the right to be happy.
That's a 5-year-old daughter of two undocumented immigrants who spoke with the Pope this week. The Pope speaking to Congress, saying, let's be humane on immigrants and migrants.
We, the people of this continent, are not fearful of foreigners, because most of us, were once foreigners.
Most of us were once foreigners. Jack Beatty, are you feeling receptivity to that in the hall, and how much on both sides of the aisle?
Well, the Pope really recalled America to its tradition of self-renewal through immigration. And at the same time, he cleansed a national palate that was really stained by the xenophobia of Trump and Carson this week. I think that was, to me, the most moving and personal moment of his. He said, I am an immigrant, too. I am the son of an immigrant,
his
too.
His family from Europe,
yes,
to Argentina.
Yes, and of course, that's the tradition of the American Catholic Church. Back in Al Smith's day, it was the church. It was European immigrants. Today, it's immigrants from Latin America. But that moment, when in the history of American Catholicism, not even the election of John F. Kennedy, not even that can match the stunning novelty of a Pope addressing Congress. The Pope of the Holy See, the sergeant at arms announced, and before the marveling eye of memory, there he was, the smiling man in white. Unthinkable. In the past, in 1928, GOP operatives distributed flyers across rural America showing the entrance to the Holland Tunnel in Manhattan underneath the legend, Al Smith's secret tunnel to the Vatican. Well, that tunnel opened this week, and there was the Pope.
How times change, and in a time when people are so concerned about the influence of religion, this kind of, it's odd in a way, but he's charismatic, how celebrated he is standing right there. Hannah, in Branford, Connecticut. Hannah, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I've been really interested in how Bernie Sanders and the Pope are seem to be speaking the same language. And I've just been excited to feel like there's a very common conversation in the air right now between two what feel like sort of disparate people.
You're talking about on economic equity, on the concern for the poor and immigrants and so on?
Exactly. And the relationship between how the environment is going to be affected and how mostly the poor people are going to be affected by this continued environment change.
What about the Pope on family issues? He spoke a little more broadly here, but everybody understands, he was not there in support of same-sex marriage. The church has been very opposed to abortion, and the Pope has not turned around on that. Some forgiveness, but otherwise not.
In my opinion, small steps. And he's on the right side of I think, a lot of issues, and a lot of issues that are going to affect a huge, huge number of people in the next 20 to 50 to 100 years.
Hannah, I appreciate your call. Hearing a resonance there with the message of Bernie Sanders. Here was the Pope talking yesterday in broader terms about family relationships, fundamental relationships being called into question on the family front.
I cannot hide my concern for the family. which is threatening, perhaps as never before, from within and without. Fundamental relations are being called into question, as is the very basis of marriage and the family.
And the Pope says he cannot hide his concern over that. Julie in Newport, Rhode Island. Julie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Yep.
I'm calling to express a little bit of just confusion over why the Pope's reception has been so enthusiastic in the media and in Congress, given that so much of the country is so sort of thrilled about the leaps we've made in terms of gay rights and in terms even of women's leadership, potentially facing a woman running for president, potentially becoming president. And we're talking about an institution that very actively keeps women out of leadership positions and is very behind the times in that regard, and also is very vocal in terms of being against gay marriage and even gay lifestyles, which may not matter as much in the U.S., but in Russia and Uganda and places where gay people are facing great brutalities, those kinds of beliefs are very harmful. So I guess I'm just confused as to why we're all so thrilled with a visit from an institution that holds these kinds of views.
I wouldn't say all. I mean, he clearly excites a lot of people. You see them on the streets, but everybody's got their own opinion. We'll look at that, Julie. I mean, here's President Obama. This was Wednesday. Yes, indeed. He was warmly welcoming Pope Francis. This was at the White House.
We see a living example of Jesus' teachings, a leader whose moral authority comes not just through words, but also through deeds.
Republican politicians were careful in talking about the Pope, but plenty of conservatives were out there not so happy. This was talk show host Mark Levin kind of lashing out, saying he's tired of being talked down to by the Pope.
We have a president and a Pope who speak down to us about so many things, whether it's immigration, whether it's poverty. Frankly, they do not appreciate the American people. They do not appreciate American history, the American heritage, what the people of this nation have done for themselves and the rest of the world.
Conservative talk show host Mark Levin there. Chris in Austin, Texas. Chris, you're on the air.
Thanks. I think the real reason Speaker Boehner stepped down is he's recognized what some of us have already seen. That is complete dysfunctionality of Congress. As a Democrat, I got to tell you, I'm amazed we have three candidates who could not be elected. They're missing in action, they can't tell the truth, or they don't know who they're addressing. On the other side of the ledger, the leading candidate has no experience and apparently doesn't understand facts or the Constitution. I think Boehner looked out and said, it's only going to get worse. I'm out of here.
Chris, we've got it talking about there about complete dysfunctionality in Congress. Ryan Grimm, do you see a passing sort of storm of the glow of the Pope this week, or something that may stick from this visit, something that may work its way through the 2016 campaign? Is this one week's excitement, or is it something that may change the chemistry?
Well, there's kind of two ways of looking at that. One is that Boehner's response here actually is much in line with what the Pope said. The Pope said we should be putting the common good on our political institutions first, you know, ahead of our own greed and our own ambition. And Boehner did that. Boehner could have, you know, fought to keep his job. Instead, he said, no, the institution is more important. I'm going to step down. On the other hand, you know, shortly after, you know, within hours of the Pope leaving the House, they put a bill on the floor that would ban the government from counting the social cost of climate regulations. It literally banned the government from taking into account the common good after the Pope gave an entire speech about how we need to take into account the common good. You can kind of wonder how long that effect will linger. But I do think that that what Boehner did today and the Pope's message are actually rather much in alignment.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, and what a week, Emmys on Sunday night, HBO won big for Game of Thrones and Veep, and Viola Davis became the first African-American woman ever to win for lead actress in a drama.
The only thing that separates women of color from anyone else is opportunity. You cannot win an Emmy for roles that are simply not there.
Baseball great and quirky phrase maker Yogi Berra, he of It Ain't Over Till It's Over and When You Come to a Fork in the Road, Take It, died this week at 90. He spoke in a 1998 interview with NBC about his famous yogiisms.
I don't even know I say these things. I really don't. I could be sitting at a table with the family, and all of a sudden they say, Dad, you said another one.
And a judge overturned the 80-year-old copyright on the famous song Happy Birthday to You, Happy Birthday, bringing it up to be sung with abandon by everyone. We'll no longer have to hear alternatives like this one at an Applebee's restaurant.
They say it's birthday!
They say it's birthday!
Happy, happy birthday!
Happy, happy birthday!
We're looking at a week in the news. John Boehner will resign from Congress. Pope Francis all over the place this week. Volkswagen meltdown, Xi Jinping in Washington, Scott Walker out of the GOP race, nightmare in Saudi Arabia. Ryan Grimm is with us, Washington bureau chief for the Huffington Post. David Joachim is here, assistant Washington editor at the New York Times. Jack Beatty's here. You can join us. Can you believe the numbers of dead in Mecca, 700 plus and counting in the stampede there? How do you explain the Volkswagen fiasco? And what's grabbing you on the 2016 campaign trail? Trump versus Fox, Walker out, Hillary Clinton against the Keystone Pipeline, Sanders up, Ben Carson and Islam. Any last words there for Yogi Berra? Horrific death toll just outside of Mecca, where enormous crowds have gathered for the annual pilgrimage there, the Hajj. Saudi King Salman spoke about the tragedy at the Hajj yesterday. He said he'd ordered an investigation into the cause of the tragedy.
Regardless of the investigation results, the improvement of the methods and mechanisms of the Hajj season will not stop. We have instructed the concerned entities to reevaluate the current policy and the distribution of responsibilities.
But boy, it's a tough scene, and it's happened again and again. 364 dead in 2006, 340 in 97, 270 in 94. In 1990, 1,426 pilgrims in a stampede in a tunnel there, you may remember, leading to holy sites in Mecca. Some work to be done there. Matt's calling from Rocca, Wisconsin. Matt, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. First of all, I'd express my sympathy at the tragedy at Mecca.
Yes.
Very, very awful. And, you know, hope that everybody finds peace over that. My comment was Ben Carson being labeled xenophobic earlier. That really bothers me. I think he has a legitimate concern. It was over him refusing to say he would support a Muslim as president of the United States. I think he has a legitimate concern, as Islam is both a religion and a form of government, and the form of government is Sharia law. And it's concerning.
But Matt, you know lots of religions have a lot of law. Look at the Bible, look at the Old Testament, it's full of laws, but yet not everyone's living by them. You don't extend the same potential for flexibility to Islam?
I think that if you look around the world, every Islamic country that you will find that you know, Islam is the majority religion in that country, is under Sharia law.
Well, but that's just simply not the case in very, very large Islamic countries. But let's listen to what he said, and we'll look at. I appreciate your call, Matt. This kind of got it rolling. This was Chuck Todd on NBC's Meet the Press. Ben Carson said he would not want a Muslim president.
Should your faith matter to voters?
Well, I guess it depends on what that faith is. If it's inconsistent with the values and principles of America, then of course it should matter.
So do you believe that Islam is consistent with the Constitution?
No, I don't. I do not. I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation. I absolutely would not agree with that.
Ryan Grimm, there was a lot of kind of polishing on that later in the week, and Ben Carson sort of trying to walk away from that, but not exactly. Where does this issue of Islam and tolerance and the GOP slate stand at the end of this week?
Well, yeah, he sort of walked it back by saying, well, what I mean is I wouldn't advocate for somebody who wanted to implement Sharia law around the United States, which, is sort of where the caller was going, which I've never understood. I can't. Can you imagine that platform ever gaining more than 0.0001%? I want to bring Sharia law.
That's not flying. But
no, that's not. You're
but
not
yet, it's got all this attention. It's become a major talking point.
But what it is, yes, it's kind of dog whistle Islamophobia. Not even it's actually human whistle. In that instance. It kills them with swing voters and with millennials and the kind of multicultural generation that's coming up and that doesn't truck with this kind of attitude. So a lot of the establishment Republicans are reeling and wondering, how are we going to rein this in? You've got Ben Carson attacking Muslims. You've got Donald Trump calling Mexicans rapists and murderers. It all runs completely counter to the famous autopsy that the Republican elites did after their wipeout in 2012. They said we need to head in a more tolerant direction, and instead they veered quite in the opposite direction.
Of course, a concern within the Republican ranks as well. I mean, interpret it any way you want. Wisconsin's Republican Governor Scott Walker suspended his campaign for president on Monday. Now, his poll numbers were down in the below one, like down in the asterisk territory. He had one time been seen as a potentially strong candidate, but on his way out, he attacked Donald Trump and encouraged other candidates to drop out and, I guess, kind of turn on what he calls the front runner here themselves.
I encourage other Republican presidential candidates to consider doing the same so that the voters can focus on a limited number of candidates who can offer a positive conservative alternative to the current front runner. This is fundamentally important to the future of the party and, more importantly, to the future of our country.
Jack Beatty, what do you make of Scott Walker's message on his way off that crowded Republican stage?
Well, when you meet Scott Walker, Grover Norquist exulted last spring, quote, "It's like seeing somebody who sits on a throne of the skulls of his enemies." Now he's back in Madison, a lonely brooder sitting on the throne of skulls made up of, Wisconsin snowplow drivers and teachers.
Back in Wisconsin, anyway. I don't know about Madison, but okay. Yeah.
Whose union he broke. Nothing in his campaign, lurching campaign, became him really like the leaving of it. His call for the other candidates, as you say, to quit the field to ensure the defeat of Trump, which he said was important not just for the sake of his party, but the sake of the country, that was about the only noteworthy thing he said. It was echoed this week by Pete Wehner, former aide to George W. Bush. He warned that the GOP is sending an intolerant message in an article called, in commentary called, "The GOP is Killing Itself." It was echoed by Matthew Dowd, another Bush alumnus, who said that after the 2012 election, the GOP didn't deal with its fundamental problem, which is, quote, their voters. And in National Review, you have Jonah Goldberg confessing his disappointment with those voters, my people, for falling for a heterodox brawler like Trump. So there's a good deal of soul searching being provoked by the governor's warning.
David Joachim, what about Donald Trump? He's got that Scott Walker swing at him there. Marco Rubio this week going after Trump, saying, I forget the exact words, but sort of thin-skinned and not deeply enough informed. How's he looking this week, David? Is he still on the Trump roll?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe when we look at Scott Walker's failure to gain any traction in the race, instead of looking about how sort of ineffectual he was as a candidate, and that may or may not have been true, I think what it really underscores is the anti-establishment strain in the GOP right now. I mean, Trump is out there and he may be offending a lot of people. He may be doing this in a very, very unorthodox way. Mm-hmm. But in doing so, he's kind of laying bare the silliness of the system, right? He's the one who's able to say, as Scott Walker and Jeb Bush and others go, kowtowing to the Kochs and other big donors, he's able to sort of call them out on it. They can't call each other out on it because they're all doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think really, what Trump represents is the party, and I think the country at large, looking at the political system and saying this, maybe Trump is a mockery, but he's sort of laying bare just how silly the political establishment is, and I'm including you and me in that.
Uh, Hey, we're all in this world. His poll numbers, I don't know if they were quite as strong this week. He's doing a lot of complaining this week, Donald Trump, that the media was overlooking some positive poll numbers. And he sort of re-upped on his beef with Fox News, especially mad at one Fox commentator, Rich Lowry, also editor of the conservative National Review. Lowry had used some off-color language to say that Carly Fiorina had emasculated Trump in the GOP debate the week before. Here was Trump yesterday morning talking with CNN.
Fox News has not treated me fairly, and they have pundits on the show. I mean, one of them made a total fool of himself last night. He totally lost it. I mean, it was watched. It looked like he was having a nervous breakdown on television. He's a total fool. A guy named Rich Lowry, who I never even heard of.
Jack, how's that going to work out? I mean, he's got a beef with Bill O'Reilly now and Rich Lowry. I mean, clearly, people are responding, have responded to Donald Trump in the polls, and yet here's all this grinding of gears.
Yes, no, there's no question about it. And he's going to have another sit down with the people, with Roger Ailes at Fox, to see if they can work out a mutually lucrative association, which seemed to be going pretty swimmingly in the past. Yeah, it really is passing strange, his candidacy. Now, whether it's just going to be, you know, someone pointed out, 4 years ago, Herman Cain was in his position, and what? And by December, he was gone. Is that going to happen with Mr. Trump? As you say, there seemed to be some movement, and in one poll, seemed to lose as much as 8 points after the CNN debate. But other polls don't show quite a loss like that, and he still is holding his relative position to the other candidates, basically up 10 points over the nearest one, Carson. So if he's going the way of Herman Cain, it hasn't happened yet. And Republican establishment people are just praying that it'll happen soon.
I mean, you can call it passing strange, but those poll numbers show a whole bunch of people, at least at this point in the campaign, looking for someone to give voice to frustration. He's clearly done that. Ryan Grimm, how do you see this going forward here with Donald and the rest? Any evidence that Scott Walker's appeal for others to follow him and dropping out so that somebody can take Trump more directly on? Any other takers?
Well, they probably don't need Scott Walker's nudging. You know, there are people like Bobby Jindal and others who are. You know, mired in the 1% range, and many of them kind of will stick around through Iowa because of what happened with Rick Santorum in 2012. You know, he was below 5% in a week or so before Iowa, and then he just absolutely surged as people started making up their mind and came in right near the top or at the top of Iowa, and then kind of rolled from there. So I think, people are going to think that, well, if it happened to Rick Santorum in a sweater vest, it could happen to me. So after Iowa, I think you're going to see a big winnowing. But, Cruz so far has defied all, Trump has defied all expectations. I think Ted Cruz is actually well positioned if some of these outsider candidates like Carson, Trump, Fiorina implode, he's the closest to the outside while also having kind of a patina of credibility from his having a position in the Senate. It's really anybody's ballgame at this point.
Democrat Bernie Sanders up again in New Hampshire polling this week. Hillary Clinton out there with policy things to say on the price of prescription drugs and maybe putting some caps on that. On the Keystone Pipeline, she had been on the fence or hadn't come down for a long time. This week, she came out against building that pipeline out of Canada into the United States for the tar sands oil.
And I think it is imperative that we look at the Keystone Pipeline as what I believe it is, a distraction from the important work we have to do to combat climate change, and unfortunately, from my perspective, one that interferes with our ability to move forward to deal with all the other issues. Therefore, I oppose it.
Jack, a surprise there or not with Hillary Clinton on the pipeline?
Well, she can't catch a favorable news cycle. Not a week, barely a day passes that she doesn't come out with a new policy initiative, yet a political headline this week typifies the coverage, quote, Hillary's FBI nightmare. Also this week, the State Department contradicted her account that former secretaries of state, quote, not just me, were asked last year for their relevant emails. Not so, State told the Washington Post. The request was prompted entirely by the discovery that Clinton had used a private email system. You know, not one syllable of this email epic is organic or related to her quest for the nomination. The distrust created by this, a recent poll finds her the least honest candidate in the Democratic field. That's a self-inflicted wound, and if she wins the nomination, Republican attack ads will magnify it into Watergate and Clinton into Nixon.
Ryan, amazing that in this week of news, we're all here almost at the end and still haven't really talked about Xi Jinping, leader of China. Talk about a power. Breakthroughs there? What does it look like?
Well, the news that China is going to adopt its own cap and trade system to try to control its carbon emissions
pretty big.
It's earth-shaking. It's huge. First of all, just on an American political level, it completely deprives the GOP of the talking point that, well, the United States shouldn't move because it can't do it alone, and China's not doing anything.
Right.
It's quite embarrassing that China is moving aggressively forward on this now. You know, they've looked at the science, and they have determined that they don't want human civilization to collapse, basically, which is what scientists are now saying will happen if we continue burning fossil fuels at this rate. So the fact that they held the announcement until he was over here, I was certainly coordinated with the White House, and they're trying to build up political capital heading into the Paris conference on climate change. The last thing I'd say is Republicans, it's been reported, have been trying to undermine that Paris conference. So if it's the case that the U.S. can't go it alone, then don't disrupt international attempts to do it collectively.
Maybe China in the lead on that front. Hacking? What hacking? He's talking cap and trade. Fascinating. I want to thank all three of you, Ryan Grimm, David Joachim, Jack Beatty. Thank you for being with us today. What a week. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.